your strikes to figure it out. It's your responsibility to make a plan for you and your family ahead of time. To learn how, take our readiness challenge at nyc.gov/readynewyork or call 311 for information. Brought to you by the New York City Office of Emergency Management and the Ad Council.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beach? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? Would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
Okay, it's not an ad. It's not. Don't say it's an ad. We don't air ads here. It's a public service announcement, and I'm sorry. Probably was the wrong one to play. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. And once more, there's nothing we can do about it. It's time for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program ends off the wall. Got all our paperwork in order. And ready for another action-packed edition of the program that will last until, about 7 p.m. or so.
You forgot to sign there. You got to sign right there.
I got to sign there?
Yeah, just right there. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right on the line.
But I signed up here. I have to sign there, too.
Oh, okay. Oh, you know what? That's my mistake. Give that back.
All right. Well,
no,
I started to sign.
No, then you'll. No, you don't want to sign twice. Then we have to start the show over.
That's federal form I'm filling out there.
That was close. I'm sorry. You know, sometimes I can be too helpful.
You're gonna. I have to initial. Put my initials in a circle.
Yeah.
If I'm gonna make a modification on that.
Okay. All right. Everything checks out, but.
You're in a federal facility, folks, at a radio station. I don't know if people know that.
Yeah.
But that's what the W means.
Well, and Bob Longman comes and checks these actually after each. Program.
Yeah, Bob Longman and Jim Wiener. They're the equivalent of police around here.
Well, they make sure that nothing is submitted fraudulently.
Because Frank's away. Our chief engineer is overseas, so we can smoke in the studio.
Is that why the ashtrays are out?
Yeah, everyone.
Okay, all right. Maybe that was Jim Wiener who brought
that
those in?
That kid's 13 years old. He can't possibly be legal.
In a training session, they're smoking?
Well... I'm not sure exactly what they're doing in the other studio, but yeah, when the mouse is away, no wait, when the cat's away, the mice, we're the mice.
They don't make kids cigarettes anymore, do they?
Children cigarettes, kinder coffee,
yeah,
and things like that.
Yeah.
And we just watched a Family Guy episode from the 1950s, so it was
longest running show on television.
60 years, over 60 years.
Can you
years?
Believe it? Isn't
wow.
that something? Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, here we are on a hot day, a hot evening.
Balmy.
Balmy. We've been a little flustered dealing with the challenges of nature, everything from surprise thunderstorms to all kinds of insects biting us and ticks, which I guess, are ticks insects or are they arthropod? They're like spider-related, which technically
means arachnid.
Arachnid, yeah. So they're actually like a crab or something.
They're hemophage.
They sure are.
They're hemophages. They are blood sucking. Not unlike some people I know.
Yeah, I could definitely personify some of them. But you know, to get all these and little tiny tick bites too. That little tiny ticks he had to find and pull out, and you hear all these horror stories. You know, there's a kind of tick bite you can get that makes you allergic to red meat.
I thought it was beer.
Beer. Really?
Oh, that's a different one.
Okay. I don't know what to believe anymore.
You didn't hear about that. Yeah,
no.
It's the tick that causes a beer allergy.
So, no, literally, I could get bitten by a tick, and then I can't have a hamburger anymore. You know? Don't mind those sounds. That's what news bulletin is coming in. So, apparently North Korea is firing more missiles.
Nothing to see here.
I'm not going to let that bother me tonight.
We have other issues and plenty of interesting stories to touch on. But no, you're right.
On the ticks, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to appear to be paranoid any more so than I already am.
It's just all consuming. It's like you have a routine now. You got to go through. It's this incredible amount of work to maintain, you know. You got to have bandages for all the, you know, and sometimes the mosquitoes are out too, so they're biting, they're attacking.
But I'm trying to talk about the ticks.
No, go ahead.
Because the tick bite that makes you not be able to have red meat anymore.
Yeah.
Might that be a good bioengineering weapon for vegetarians? You see where I'm going with this? They spread the ticks around, okay, and then all these people all of a sudden can't eat red meat anymore. Huh?
Okay.
And sort of their agenda gets moved forward a little bit, and before you know it, you have all these involuntary vegetarians stumbling around.
I also heard that people that like completely swear off meat, like they end up cheating and like going back to it like quite frequently.
Yeah, but you can't. It's not swearing off meat. You can't. You're allergic to it. You're more of a hardcore vegetarian than a voluntary vegetarian because you literally can't have it anymore.
Because it makes you ill
or you have
symptoms. So, wait, why do you subscribe to this, like, bioengineering, like, weaponization
thing? I'm trying
thing?
To start
For
a conspiracy
every
theory.
Every other scenario when it comes to these ticks, you're not on board. But this particular scenario over the meat and it being a vegan. Let me get this straight. It's a vegan plot.
It's got legs, okay? This one, I think, can do it. It's not vegan, vegetarian. I mean, it could be vegan, too, but I'm just saying. You have this bug that bites you and produces. Imagine if there was a horsefly that turned you liberal, okay? That made you vote for Hillary Clinton. Imagine, yeah. You know, and I know Republicans believe that, so why can't I make this, you know, land and spread around?
Well,
I just think there's something there.
Okay, no. I'm not disputing.
Who?
Is that from... That's another news story.
That's a more urgent news story.
Okay. That's a different wire service.
And you know what? I will give a prize to anybody who can tell me what those notes mean, what those notes actually mean.
But, you have a lot of sources of news.
Well, there's a lot happening.
Okay. No, it is. But we are in our own bubble here.
Vegetarian ticks.
This is the off-the-wall bubble, and we are currently... ending the conversation.
I like that. Off-the-wall bubble. Let's call the show that from now on.
Well, we create our own little, you know, world here. We talk about what we talk about. There's all kinds of, yes, there's debates. We know there's debates tonight. Uh-huh. We're not talking about that.
No.
Okay?
Oh, we're not?
No, we're not. Stop.
That was 60% of my material. Okay.
No, don't tell people. Now you told people about your material. Now they know that this is all pre-rehearsed. I'm just standing here on the... chair. Now I'm on the chair. I'm on the chair.
You're supposed
now.
To be on the chair. Sentence
and
ago, but,
I'm trying to tell you that this is how we do the show. We go by the seat of our pants.
You were supposed to fall off the chair by now.
And we
stick
we have
script.
A natural
stick
conversation.
Oh my God!
And we shout and we have animated discussions with listeners who call in. The phone number for the station, which is 631-622-9872. All right, I'm getting off the chair now. All right.
9872, by the way, spells WUSB.
Yes, it does. It does. We're broadcasting at WUSB. Stony Brook, 90.1 FM. Don't go to our website.
Yeah. You're here.
Use a radio.
Yeah.
And, it's the best
and,
way to
and
tune.
You neglect to mention we're at 107.3 as well. But you pretty much have to be at Stony Brook to be able to hear that.
Oh, W297BM?
That's the one.
Stony Brook?
That's the very same one.
All right, so are you done with it? What else you got about these ticks? They're vegan ticks.
No, that's all I had on ticks. But, you know, we're talking about nature and all the various challenges. We had a raid, a series of raids, where animals came and ate our vegetables in the vegetable garden, which is really annoying.
You spend months
growing things, and then all of a sudden, a hedgehog, a woodchuck, a mole, a
groundhog.
Groundhog. That's all the same basic animal.
Well, I think anybody who's tried to grow food would realize that it's competitive out there, especially... with other wildlife, so yeah, as much as you're interested in your food, there's other creatures that are as well.
Apparently, yeah, you know, you got birds, but you know, we have surveillance, and we were able to see deer. They were eating my rose bushes, okay? I have rose bushes, and the deer comes, I thought the thorns were what the rose bush designed to protect itself from being eaten, but apparently that doesn't work, because the deer came and just ate the entire thing.
I had an attack on... some peppers, pepper plant. Mm-hmm. I actually got them at the King Cullen that closed.
The King Cullen that closed.
Yeah, it was, you know, my memento from the closing of the Cullen.
Do you know that King Cullen was the first chain supermarket in the United States?
I'm talking about my peppers.
I'm sorry, that's an important point
rest
of information.
In peace, rest in peace.
You can't return them because King Cullen is gone.
They were dollar peppers, and so yeah, one
now you know why.
Got attacked. Thankfully, I had another one on reserve. That one nearly got attacked, but you know what I did?
What?
I bought habanero peppers. Yeah. So if that animal comes back, it's going to burn. It is going to eat that, and I hope it eats a habanero.
Ate a habanero pepper
yesterday. I thought I could handle it, yeah.
Because we got that somewhere, and I was left over.
Pickled peppers.
You just bit into one, and I almost literally saw steam coming out of your ears. It was that spectacular. And for a half hour, you almost couldn't speak.
Yeah, I was getting, you know, the feeling when your cheeks start tingling?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's that hot, like, where your jaw
There's
and your
nothing
cheeks
you can do.
Are just numb and, like, tingling like pins and needles.
Nothing you can do.
That was me for like 15 minutes after eating a pickled habanero pepper. I think we got that with some barbecue. But that's not the point.
No.
Point is, everyone is out to get you, and I am in conflict with living creatures at this point.
What bothers me is that we spend one day marveling at the nature. You know, we say, oh, look, a chipmunk. And then the next day, the chipmunk is destroying something that you spent 6 months building. You got your squirrels, you got your raccoons, you've got all kinds of waterfowl and predatory birds and things like that. And, you know, the small, the big, they're all out to thwart your efforts. And we don't want to be at war with nature.
Well,
I'm sorry for playing the nature PSA before. That was unintentional. Maybe we won't go out of our way to save them as readily if they keep up with this attitude.
It puts you in direct conflict with that because on the one hand, you know, we talked about admiring different packs of deer or whatever in the area that come through and I think talked about the deer blocks or the bait that you put out. Now I realize. That is like, it's like a racketeering kind of thing, or like, mm-hmm. It's like a hustle. It's like, you have to keep buying it for the animals, otherwise they come back and they want to annihilate everything and like eat everything in sight.
That's what happened. You bought a cube, and I know we could even do this around here. You bought a cube that feeds deer, and also feeds squirrels. The squirrels find out about it first, and they just spend all day there. But the deer came by, and came by a lot, and then...
Less than a day.
The cube was gone, and then the deer came back and was just kind of standing there looking for it. And that happened for a couple of days, and then the next day the deer came and ate the rose bush. I think there's a message there.
Yeah, it's like... It'd be a shame if we had to go any further into the garden.
Yeah, look what they made me do.
I got one hoof in. Yeah, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What if I got two hoofs?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, look at me. I got two hoofs all in your garden. I'm doing it. I'm crossing. And so anyway, that's the standoff that we've been experiencing. So
well, this is
anyway.
This is what we've had to face and why we... We're just a little flustered because we're trying to be good citizens in the Tree of Life and all that. But
I don't want to commiserate about it.
No, it's.
It's a reality, and as an advocate for wildlife generally, that's a big generally. I'm still supportive of living creatures, but
it's a two-way street. You know, if we're going to look out for the animals I think should be looking out for us. Like, there was this owl the other night that was keeping me up. It was sounding like a barking dog. It was that loud. I mean, come on already. You know, if I wanted to live in the city where all this noise was happening, I would live in the city. So owls keep it down at night. Is that so much to ask?
That's when they're out, though. They're nocturnal.
Okay, and whose choice is that?
Mm.
Yeah. All right, we should focus on some other things, though.
There's tons going on.
Debates tonight.
I mentioned that. I got
a lot of material about the debates.
I might watch a little bit about the debates on the cable news network.
Oh, we have our film of the week. We saw a film.
Can I say the name of it?
Well, yeah, of course. It's 1952 we're into now. We saw the international Oscar winner from 1952. I've not gotten to the domestic one yet, but yes, tell us the title of the 1952 winner.
Forbidden Games.
Forbidden Games. And where is that from?
Oh, well, it's from...
What language were they speaking?
What was that?
For God's sake.
Italian?
No, they were...
French.
Yeah, they were from Paris.
French. But wasn't it an Italian
That was a different
production?
Film. That was a different film. That was
okay.
The previous film. So Forbidden Games is basically... it takes place pretty much when Germany was invading France in 1940. And this little girl is running with her parents, along with all these other refugees, trying to cross a bridge... while the Nazis are bombing them, and they've got, she has a puppy dog, and they're just trying to escape, and then the Nazis from the airplane start shooting, you know how they do when they shoot down a street, and they hit everybody except for the little girl, so her parents are dead, Her parents are dead right there at the beginning of the film. And her dog is also killed.
He did.
He dead. And
dead dog.
But there's more. That's not the whole film. That's about the first 5 minutes. The weird thing.
I think this movie was stupid.
All right, you can tell us why.
Go ahead.
But
finish talking about how stupid.
I have an observation, uh-huh. And I think this is kind of important.
Yes.
You notice when that dog was dying, the dog seemed to be really dying. Like the legs of the dog were twitching in a way that dogs don't twitch unless they're dying. And then when they threw when the peasant woman threw the dead dog into the river. Kind of looked like a real dead dog that she threw into the river. So, I don't know. You might want to look this up. Forbidden Games, did they really kill the dog? Back in 1952, I don't think they cared as much. I'm pretty sure the ASPCA wasn't on hand for that film.
No, but this is actually how PETA was started.
Maybe.
Yeah.
You can see why.
They were organized in response to this film. No, I'm making that up, but...
Well, I believed you. That makes perfect sense.
They were doing cutaways of the stuffed dog, I think. So they had this dog trained to lay down, and it was twitching.
Oh,
and
I don't think
it
she
would
was...
do a cutaway to a stuffed dog.
Okay, I don't think she was carrying a dead dog for the entire film. I think, yeah, they might have had a stuffed one, but at certain points...
It was very
it,
alive.
It sure looked like a real dead dog.
Yeah.
And how do you explain the twitching?
No, the twitching was a real dog, but I think that was a dog that was trained to lay like that and probably twitching because it was holding itself in a... You know, like staying still, like a sit, but it's, you know, fidgety because it's doing something it's trained to do. But I think it had an effect of making it look like it was really in agony because the first cut to that, I mean, I know exactly the shot you're talking about, is right after her parents are murdered, you know, in war.
And they killed them,
by
too.
By this aerial assault.
They
yeah.
killed the actors that played her parents as well for a realistic effect.
And threw them into the river.
They played hard back then.
Yeah.
You had to make a good film, and you had to make some sacrifices.
Changed. Yeah, it's Hollywood's changed a little bit. You know, they have different standards and practices now.
It wasn't Hollywood. It was Europe. It's a totally different game.
Oh, right, right.
And the thing about this film, too, there was an alternate ending and beginning where basically they kind of encapsulated the whole thing into a story where basically these two kids were reading a story. The entire film was the story, and then at the end the story was over and the kids were sort of explaining it.
It made it more of a fairy tale.
It did, and I think that original beginning and ending didn't work. And I think the way they did it, which actually it cut off rather quickly at the end. A lot of people criticize it for that, but I think that made it work. They kind of, I'm not going to give away the ending, but losing everything pretty much, losing all the people you care about and not being able to see them again, and then Finn, over, done.
It was a very terse way that it ends, and I think, yeah, it's not happy or like, you know, quintessential by any stretch at all. This is not like a something that resolves in the way you might anticipate. But as far as the theme, like I kind of get what was going on with the kids sort of imagining. It's almost like post-traumatic stress. They're like dealing with the realities in the cemetery and some of the crosses and stuff. I don't want to talk about it too much.
To give a general sense of the plot, this little kid... after she loses her parents and her dog, wanders into this farmyard where she meets a boy a little bit older than her. They become friends, and she becomes a part of their family. And for some reason, she really wants to bury her dog with a cross, and then she wants to bury all these other animals to keep it company.
They basically make a pet cemetery.
Yeah, they're not killing pets. In fact, at one point, the kid killed a cockroach, and he really did kill a cockroach. There's no way that was a special effect. He really killed a cockroach. They would never get away with that today.
But they were burying everything.
And she got really upset when he did that. She said, don't kill them. But when they were already dead, yeah, okay, let's bury them. But every time you bury an animal, you have to get a cross. And where do you get a cross? From churches and from cemeteries. And that did not sit well with the neighborhood. So there was all kinds of conflict there.
But they're sort of acting out their trauma, or like there's something there, I think, on a deeper level that I wanted to buy into, but it was not developed at all.
It was kind of
like it's super simple, the storyline.
But it was the innocence of childhood and dealing with death.
While everything is going on in the back, like, yeah, as a background, I get that. And it would just seem very cumbersome, but simple.
It's not the kind of film you would ever see coming from this country then or now.
Yeah.
And I think that's what made it all the more valuable. So Forbidden Games, 1952. And we'll see the domestic film hopefully by next week. And maybe something else. We saw a lot of films at the Stoneberg Film Festival. That was good.
We thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah, the film about the deaf...
What was his name? The deaf kid hiding a convict somewhere in Manitoba, which is exactly where those two kids are hiding right now, the ones who killed a bunch of people
in Canada. Art imitates life.
Well, maybe the RCMP needs to see this film, because he was hiding in a barn, a big barn, and this deaf kid was helping him. Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad played the convict.
Yep.
Really good film. Really good film, and they showed it with captions on. For the deaf community.
It's true. And what else do we see? We also saw the film about East Germany. That was students basically having, it was called the Silent Protest. The Silent, I can't remember. This is terrible. Here.
We have a guide.
I have a guide. Look at this. Saved by Stony Brook.
Tell us the title of the deaf kid film as well.
The deaf kid film. Deaf kid.
We can't be calling it that. We can't be, have to have the real titles. We're bad with real titles.
Oh, terrible. What is wrong with us? The Parts You Lose was the Aaron Paul film with deaf child.
Doesn't feel like the right title to me.
Ten-year-old who lives in a small farm. Yeah,
but the Silent Protest, is that what the name is? That makes sense, because
Silent Revolution. That was a good
Silent Revolution. Yeah, I got it wrong.
Yeah.
But that was basically kids in 1956. 1956 was when Hungary had an uprising against Soviet occupation, and these kids in East Germany heard about it, and they decided, in honor of the people who had been killed in the protest, that they would have a 2-minute silence in their classroom. Without, telling the teacher why they were being silent for 2 minutes, drove the teacher crazy, and eventually he demanded to know why they were being silent, and somebody ratted them out, and it turned into a whole big thing where all kinds of authorities got involved, because you can't have people protesting in a society like that. And it was really, it tells you a lot about control, about dictatorial regimes.
Bureaucracies. Yeah, the Minister of Education, I guess, comes and threatens all of them, threatens them with their diplomas, withhold their graduation.
It's about idealism, about kids saying, with standing up for what's right, and we believe in this.
And get this, they were daring to listen to radio.
Yeah, they went to this old guy's house, and he was listening to shortwave radio and hearing voices from the West. And wow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. What did you think of Jupiter?
Jupiter was a short film. It was basically about people, part of some kind of a cult, and there was a comet. Apparently the comet was on its way to Jupiter, which is unusual. But they were doing kind of like a Hale Bopp thing, where they were joining, and this kid was being dragged along with them.
And she clinched the tube.
Clinched the tube?
Yeah, well, they had this sort of medication kind of thing, and she didn't go along with it.
Well, she didn't drink the Kool-Aid, is what
Basically. Something like that, whatever. Go see it.
Well, don't give away the ending. It's a short film.
I'm trying to ruin everything.
Well, we already talked longer than the film is.
All right, In God I Trust, yada, yada, another
In God I Trust.
In America.
That actually won the award, I think, for the best film, which I didn't agree with. I didn't think it was that. It seemed kind of preachy to me, but it was good. I liked it. But it just seemed a little too, okay, let's have this argument now. And, okay, this person's going to buy a gun. Well, that's his right. He can buy that gun. Basically saying all these things that seem like they're just political arguments.
It was like Crash 10 years later.
Which I never saw, but I agree with you.
Anybody who's seen Crash and then sees this movie is going to draw the parallels. And it was mentioned in the Q&A after that film. At the festival, so a lot of other people noticed the similarities to that in Crash, which the director, it was the first time she was directing, I think it was one of her first projects, and she took it as a compliment. I would take it as, a critique, like, hey, you're plagiarizing, but she seemed to accept that as a high compliment, which I thought was a little tone deaf, like, no, you could have gone in another direction with this story, because this was done 10 years ago, But I think, you know, it was distinct, and it did have some interesting stuff. It had, like, the scenery of, like, Fargo, a film I haven't seen. So, but it was out there, I think. I don't know. Like you said, I just wasn't hitting quite the tones.
The film I liked was the train station film with, what's his name?
I'm
bad at these things. It was one of the last Monday, I believe. A week
right,
ago Monday.
Right.
Come on, there's only one page. How hard is it to look?
What's his name?
Give me the guide if you're not going to find it.
Guest artist. This was Jeff Daniels from Dumb and Dumber fame.
That doesn't matter.
Anyway, yes, Jeff Daniels, who is actually just as known for his Broadway.
What's the name of the film?
I just said guest artist. I said it twice now.
Guest artist was the name of the film?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like
these
you don't
titles,
even hear
they don't,
it.
They're not right. Guest artist.
Right, doesn't sound like a title.
Train station.
I did say guest artist, and you didn't hear me because guest artist is... Well, anyway, he plays a guy who is a screenwriter or whatever who is the guest artist in some small town, also kind of like out in the middle of Minnesota. And
yeah, I took an Amtrak all the way out there.
Fargo looking, yeah. But anyway... is met by an adoring understudy or someone who for whom he is a muse and an aspiring screenwriter, and it the entire thing takes place with basically no other characters except for the train station attendant.
Right. It reads just like a play because it was a play, so it actually works in a single. A single place, trains going by occasionally. You see the train guy occasionally looking up, or maybe contributing a line of dialogue. But it's mostly dialogue intensive, and I thought it moved really well.
A lot of passion, very deep. I think in an emotional sense.
But what I learned was Jeff Daniels really it plays a big part in writing plays and in working with this particular production. The people who were part of this film were all from the same playhouse.
Yes.
And they just pulled their talent together and made what I thought was a pretty amazing film. Although, the title of this guest artist, okay. It takes place in a train station. Occasionally trains go wailing by.
How about The Great American Play?
Okay, that was the play within the play. It was called The Great American Play. Yeah, that would have been a better title, I think.
It's the new title.
That would have been a better title.
Anyway.
So, yeah, we saw a lot of films.
And The Bicycle Thief.
But Bicycle Thief.
Oh. You know what? That was a different night.
Okay.
That's funny. There was a short in the festival called The Bicycle Thief, and we just talked about The Bicycle Thieves.
Wait, there was a short called The Bicycle
there
Thief?
There was a short called The Bicycle Thief.
But there was a film called The Bicycle Thief that we've already seen.
We reviewed it a couple weeks ago as a part of our historical films.
Well, we didn't see this one. This is a British film?
No, we didn't.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to judge it.
I was trying to think of other short films. But anyway, great series. Snowy Brook Film Festival, definitely not to miss.
Except you'd miss it. It's over.
Except you all missed it because we're talking about it and you aren't.
But there's a fall one that comes on Fridays, I think starting in October or something. We'll bring you more information
great.
As we get that. And, of course, next year.
Great bit of culture. Mm-hmm. Definitely something fun to do. So that was exciting. What other interesting stories we got?
Well, there's a debate tonight. The first night of the 50-candidate debate for Democratic presidential nominee.
I don't care.
Happening. You know, we have to care. We better care because it's our only hope of getting out of this mess. Wow, what happened this week? Trump went on a rampage as well. I say that every week.
Our favorite
I guess.
Senator, Elijah Cummings.
He's not a senator. He's a representative.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Our favorite legislature.
But he's not a legislature.
Our legislative representative, Elijah Cummings.
Okay,
from the great
I'll give you that.
State of Maryland.
You know, we saw him in person. We went
did.
Down to see the Hillary Clinton hearing back when we thought she was going to be president.
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry for muddling titles and branches of government.
Well, he basically, attacked him, attacked Baltimore.
Yeah, it's not the point. The point is he was a total jerk to this guy.
And basically, I did a little research into Twitter history, and I found every time Trump said infest or infested, he was always referring to black people, to immigrants, to the continent of Africa. And a number of people have noticed this, that he only uses that word when dealing with people that don't look like him. And it's disgusting. It really is. And he's unapologetic for it. In fact, he doubled down. And
if you haven't heard it already, he basically described told Elijah Cummings to go back to his city that is, quote, rat-infested, and that is thus the word infested, and has been discussed as a term used really only to make either kind of disparaging remarks about minority communities and neighborhoods or parts of the country, or even anti-Semitic types of references. Suffice to say, it's not very productive, but that's what our leader is spending his time on. This on the heels of making remarks about the Gang of Four. Is that what they're called? I'm sorry, the Squad.
The Squad, yeah.
Squad. Sorry, respectfully.
Well, you know, in some ways, I'm very proud of people who are standing up and saying things that basically take courage to say. And are standing up for what they believe in, and I'm proud of the people who rise to their defense. But I'm also really sad that we're at this state where we actually have these kinds of conversations, where this is a reality, and you can't even debate that it's reality anymore. This the ugliness that's in our society, the hatred, the outright racism, the unapologetic racism.
Ironically, this. Party needs the incumbent party needs support from communities and people of color big time. Mm-hmm. Like they really need that vote, and so of course he went to the great state of Virginia to talk about race today and African Americans in general, but you know, on the side, like from the sidelines, he's not in it, he's not really down for their interests, but he's happy to bring them up and use them as a spectacle in conversation at his rallies in this case. So that's what's going on that front. Very weirdly ironic. And as you said, you know, why are we living? Why is it this time? What is it about this time? And why? How is this even real? But that is the state of affairs. Is we're going really full on into this election cycle. And
the thing that I think really is more startling is just seeing all those surrounding him and all those in his outer orbit that defend everything he does, everything he says. And
downplay it.
Of course, he's not racist, et cetera, et cetera. Things that you have to pinch yourself to see if this is real, that people actually believe this nonsense.
And the rest of us are sitting, like, basically reacting like, really? This is your guy? This is your guy.
And you know, at times it's very easy to become so defeatist, to just accept that this is where we are heading, that we are in this really hostile, nasty, hateful, suspicious world. And it's just going to keep getting worse and worse. We just saw this series, recommended to us by Jones, by the way, thank you, called Years and Years from England. It's kind of like, I describe it as Black Mirror meets The Leftovers, because it kind of is like The Leftovers that makes sense. It takes place in England, and it's over the next 10, 15 years or so. You see, like, technology developing. You see social things changing.
Future presence, kind of.
Yeah, and it uses real people. You see Trump, and Trump actually drops a nuke on somebody. I'm not going to say who. It's a six-part series. It's really worth seeing. You just basically see what happens in 4 years, what happens in 8 years. Real people dying, real people taking power, countries changing, coups. And how does that affect people? And you see how quickly it all falls apart. You see
BBC goes off the air.
BBC is taken off the air, yes. Things like that. It's British. You might need captions because, you know, there's a lot of things said to the side that you might not get unless you're reading, but you know, some people find it easier to see than others.
But it's really well done as far as playing off the present day events.
It's so realistic.
The topical kinds of things. They just take it to logical extents or project it out. Like, what would this be? Mm-hmm. What's a logical or illogical extent of this scenario or this aspect of what's going on right now? Fascinating.
You see how refugees are treated. You see what happens when you become one yourself. You see what happens when technology advances to the next stage. You see how that affects the way people treat each other. You see the personal assistance developing more and more. It's not a dull moment at all. It's something that I think is really worth.
And they play a lot. Play a lot with time. The pacing and the way they breeze through decades in time. That I think it's jarring, but it also I think frees them to really push the arc of the stories they're telling. It's just incredible when you speed through that so quickly. It just changes the type of storytelling. You can throw in years. You can throw in things that are just really picking up the story and really pushing it ahead. And it just makes it something really unusual as far as pacing, because not a lot of the programming that people consume are on those kinds of timescales.
Years and Years is the series, 6 parts. It's on HBO. The finale aired last night, actually. And I don't think many people know about it. It was on BBC. It actually aired there first. But it's really it's really fascinating. Seeing that, it makes you kind of think, wow, these things are inevitable. Climate change and just the de-evolution of society and all this populism, hatred, fear of the other, doesn't have to be that way. And every time I see people fighting that, I get inspired. But yeah, at the same time, you also have so many setbacks. We just had another mass shooting in California involving white nationalism. The guy that behind that at the Garlic Festival.
Yeah, and. I think had referenced a book in a posting that was very famous or held in high regard by Klan members. Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? I'm so sick of talking about this. I'm so sick of acknowledging it. And I don't know what the answer is, because with online technology, you have such easy access to all this hate-filled material. But something, we have to think of something to keep this from spreading and gaining so much power, because it really is a sickness.
Yeah. Twitter, looking at you.
Twitter is doing more harm than good, I think. There is good that can come out of it, but there is also so much harm that can come out of it as well. Just with mob speech, you know, and getting more... more power in saying something than is actually there. So you create this false sense that there's an army when there isn't.
Yeah.
People need to get outside more and talk face-to-face. There's not enough of that.
But in Mississippi, there was a shooting there, too.
Okay. Well, there was a shooting in Brooklyn as well.
There's a huge shooting in Brooklyn, and that did not get nearly the coverage as this garlic festival.
It was also at a festival. Only one person got killed, but it was still, you know, kind of a terrifying thing for the people that were there. And it's not a competition, you know. There was a shooting in Walmart today. Not our Walmart, but one. I think the one you're talking about, was it Mississippi?
Yeah, I think that was a Walmart.
Was it a Walmart shooting or was it a different shooting? We don't know.
Didn't the deck water polo team got a building collapse on them? I mean, we can talk about all kinds of devastation.
Well, building collapse is a whole other show.
Yeah.
But, you know, I saw this other story that moved a couple of days ago, which I thought was kind of interesting. I don't know if you remember this, but back in 1993... there was a shooting in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and this was a school shooting, which basically was two kids were took part in this. Actually, it was 1998. I'm sorry, Westside Middle School in Jonesboro. Kids were 11 and 13. And they killed 4 students and a teacher with multiple weapons. They were both arrested when they attempted to flee, and they were imprisoned until they were 21, because that was the law You know, they killed all these people, but they
were charged as adults.
Were they charged as adults? Well, if they were charged as adults, I think they would have been held beyond 21. So I don't think they could have been charged as adults.
Well, maybe as minors, they were used the same statute that they were tried as adults. Maybe.
Well, anyway.
Given the lightest possible adult sentence.
They were tried as juveniles. They were found guilty of 5 counts of murder. Following their convictions, their names, by the way, were Mitchell Johnson and Andrew Golden. Johnson and Golden were taken by National Guard helicopter to Alexander, Arkansas, so they could be placed at the Arkansas Juvenile Assessment and Treatment Center. The Arkansas Department of Human Services, Youth Services, good God, Arkansas Department of Human Services, Youth Services Division's Juvenile Facility, and the state's most secure juvenile facility. They're among the youngest people ever charged with murder in United States history. And the Jonesboro prosecutor later stated if it were not for their ages, he would have sought a death sentence for them. So anyway, they were both released on their 21st birthday. The reason why this story came back and came back into our attention was because on July 27th of this year, Andrew Golden was killed in a head-on collision in Independence County, Arkansas. Yeah, that sort of brought it all back. I realized, wow, okay, that person's been out. I didn't even realize that person was released. They were both released. I, you know, did some reading on the story and discovered that they were out. They took on or at least one of them took on a different name. Golden was known as Drew Douglas Grant. His whereabouts were unknown until he applied for a concealed weapon permit in Arkansas on October 7, 2008. Can you imagine? You massacre people and you apply for a concealed weapon permit. His application was denied by the Arkansas State Police, who noted that he had lied on the application about his previous residences and declared it was illegal for Golden to own or possess a firearm. The assumed name that he was using had been unknown until this point because of a gag order, but police were able to tie Andrew Golden to Grant through fingerprint records during the background check for the permit. So had he not done that, they wouldn't have even made the connection. But the other guy, the guy who's still alive, Mitchell Johnson, on January 1st, 2007, he was arrested by the ATF after a traffic stop in Fayetteville, Arkansas, on misdemeanor charges of carrying a weapon, a loaded 9mm pistol, and possession of 21.2 grams of marijuana. Though the van that Johnson was riding in was registered to him, the driver was 22-year-old Justin Trammell. The two of them reportedly met at Alexander Youth Services Correctional Facility, where Trammell was incarcerated after pleading guilty to the 1999 crossbow murder of his father, a crime committed when he was 15. The pair were roommates and provided officers with the same Fayetteville address. Trammell was cited for careless driving and released. Johnson, the guy convicted for killing 5 people in the school shooting, was arrested for possession of marijuana and a loaded weapon and later released on a $1,000 bond. He was indicted by a federal grand jury October 24, 2007, for possession of a firearm while either using or addicted to a controlled substance. The thing that bothers me about this whole story is everything that you read here, there's nothing in it that says this guy was convicted of trying to get a gun because he was a damn mass killer that was convicted for that. No, he gets in trouble for carrying a gun while he has drugs or for carrying a gun in the wrong jurisdiction or basically technicalities like that. But there is nothing here anywhere that says this guy cannot ever have a gun because he's a killer, because he killed his classmates. That's not in here. And I have this feeling that there are people who would stand up for his right, his quote-unquote right, to own a gun after all this. That is what is sick. That is incredible, but that is the truth.
Yeah, I don't think he could be convicted for having been a felon, but he was a felon at one point, and that should be an attribute of any kind of charge against him. Like, it would be a previous conviction, right? And that's what came up in the other his prior accomplice having been caught in the screening process for the other weapons application. It seems like it's the same thing. So, yeah, it's a bit silly that the police are having to do so much legwork, but none of the actual technical charges.
Just listen to this one sentence. Johnson technically had no criminal record from the Jonesboro shooting. Think about that. Because he was a juvenile, and because he had no criminal record from the Jonesboro shooting, because he was a juvenile, he can own a gun. He can go out and buy another gun. This is insane, people. This is crazy. We have to identify it as such.
Yeah, I think if you killed somebody with a gun, you should probably be limited in your ability, even if you serve your time. I just think maybe you had your chance.
Yeah. And how about this? If you're a cop and you kill somebody with a gun, you're done being a cop. All right.
Maybe it
wasn't your fault, but you know what? You're kind of tarnished now. It's better if you don't do that again.
We'll trust you with the stapler. You can go work in the office, and you get the stapler. That's what you get.
Yeah, and either you get a prison sentence for being wrong, or you get a pension for being right, but you don't get to do it again. You shouldn't want to do it again, period. It's the way we think about these things just seems so backwards and frustrating. And I just hope that we keep having the conversation and we get there eventually. But, man, this is... It's just too much to bear sometimes.
Well, they didn't stop and ask questions at the Garlic Festival.
No, that's true. That's true.
And they took his little behind out. So, anyway. Any other mass murder news stories?
No. Debate tonight, though.
You're right. Kamala Harris is going to be out there
She's not going to be there tonight. That's tomorrow
Wednesday.
Night.
Damn.
You know, if we had talked about the debate like I wanted to, we would know this.
Okay, so that means Beto's tonight, right?
Beto's tonight, and this is his last chance. If he doesn't shine tonight, I think he's done. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are both going to be on the same stage, next to each other, in fact. So that's going to be interesting. Are they going to attack each other? Or, you know, they're the most liberal ones there. Everybody else is kind of a moderate. So I think they're going to need to dig in and help each other out.
But also differentiate, right?
Like, yeah.
They may want to make little distinctions here and there between the two of them, but who knows? Maybe that opportunity is not there. Maybe they have an agreement. Do you think they have a pact?
I would hope so.
Nobody knows. I there's all kinds of strategy going on, but I guess the most important thing is if you're going to watch, focus on just who's there that night and scribble down some criteria like we did and assign, you know, some tallies or some kind of... Create a system, but
we got to do that again. We're going to keep, let's keep notes.
But I think we should.
We should, yeah. We owe it to the country.
We owe it to the system.
Mm-hmm.
It is part of being an informed citizenry. And then you have a paper trail for when somebody asks you why you chose somebody. You can point to your paper and say, well, this was my paper record system during the first debate or second debate.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, yeah, keep track, keep score, see who you like, and then watch again tomorrow and see whom else you like.
It starts in about an hour. Now, I know this causes problems because people will be listening to Finn. You can keep the radio on in the background and have closed captioning on for the debate. You could do that.
Yeah. Because body language and then the text is, you know, that basically equals listening.
It sure does. It sure does. Okay, so we're pretty much done. OTW@2600.com is our email address. You can write to us. We'd like to hear from people. I want to go out with something for the people of Baltimore, and especially for people that don't know anything about the people of Baltimore, which is for sure our chief executive. The things he said were simply filled with ignorance and hatred and prejudice. And we're better than that. I know we're better than that. I don't think he's much better than that. But I'd like to go out with some words. So
better to have a few than be one.
Have a few what than be one?
Rats.
Oh yeah, that's what the Baltimore Sun said.
Right.
Yeah,
they
meant it too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's it for Off the Wall tonight. We'll see you again next week. Good night.
So long.
Man, Baltimore, I think people forgot about how great the city is, how important the city is to the market of music that's about to become here, man. I'm just so so fed up that everybody's not on the same page and how much this rap game and the market of music here can be blown up so high, man. Like, I want all us just to come together, man, and, like, stand strong. But somebody has to be a leader, you understand, to create this market of music that we're about to bring here and this big, powerful movement that we're about to bring here, man. I mean... Oh, man.
From the city where everybody talk with their hands. Get a 9 to 5, most hustles revolve around grams. Live for the moment, we ain't working no plan. And the favorite saying is, it is what it is. I mean, the kids sit back and try to emulate us. The cops had to regroup, yeah, they ran out of cups. So now they string us up on some cowboy wild style. The saga continues, but meanwhile, grandma, she getting close to the death. Bobbing with hand, eyes closed, clutching her chest. All the hate in the air make it harder to breathe. And all the cameras in the hood make it hard to believe. Little man riding that 5 and he died for his creed. Yeah, they grow up so quick, nobody clocking the speed. But it's just us, so just be more. And if you ain't feeling that, yeah, this song's for y'all, you heard me? What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? Uh-huh. What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. Things have changed back in the days. It's like we all stubborn. We all stuck in our ways. Nobody care no more. Nobody got a heart. Nobody feel no more. They move the blacks to the county on some reconstruction. They say everywhere we go, all we bring is destruction. What? Man, the city was built on our backs. But we lost our history. We know they hide all the facts. Remember when the A-Rag comes through with the fruit? Saturday morning, everybody cleaning the stoop. Back when we stuck together and looked out for the youth. Now we over ourselves and y'all know it's the truth. But if we keep this up, we gon' die like this. And if you got kids, they won't survive like this. Look, it's just us, so just be more. And if you ain't feeling that, then this song is for y'all. Let's go. Yeah. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore. What you know about Baltimore? What you know about Baltimore? Baltimore.
People don't realize what they about to do in the city. I got friends in the game, man. It's politicians, man. They tell me everything that's going on in the city, man. And I really feel that we're not taking advantage of all the things that's about to pop off, man. In the next 3 years, I'm starting to see it on TV now about slot machines and stuff like that, man. It's going to be casinos, man. These casinos need music, man. You understand what I'm saying? Why should they go out of town and hire different acts when they got a mess of all the people right here that can give them the raw ball? You know, I mean, they tear down buildings everywhere in downtown to build up condos, man. They tear down a lot of different things, like, you know, and they putting up condos. These condos are going to be filled with people, a different market of music of people that's going to be spending money and trying to get to know our culture. You understand? Our Baltimore culture. You understand what I'm saying? Man, I'm not going nowhere. I'm staying here. A chick told me to... Baltimore never make it. I'm here to say that we are going to make it. And I'm not leaving until my fingers bleed. You understand?